Hello, this is Red Femme, the first episode of May 2024. It's May Day, in fact, today.
Oh yeah, happy May Day.
So it makes sense we're going to talk about protests.
Of course.
So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the student protests in America, because there hasn't been the same kind of thing on our campuses here.
No.
And not so much whether we agree with the cause, but the tactics and how different student protests are to when we were students.
Yes, yeah. And the dynamics involved in these protests.
Yeah. So we're talking really about Columbia University, which last night, I mean, it's now spread to like 20 something universities across the US, but last night Columbia, the police went in and unoccupied it, ironically, sort of dragging students out of there, arresting them and putting them on buses. And various students have been suspended. I think their chief negotiator, a grand title, has been suspended. So, you know, some people are saying online things like, oh, you went to Columbia, you have 300 grand debt, but now you have a felony record.
Yeah.
And you'll never get a job. So some people are really sort of rubbing salt in the wound there.
Yeah, and I just think that when you're young like that, those protests, they feel like the coolest, most important thing. And I think now, especially when there is such a lack of meaning and purpose in young people's lives, they don't feel like they're going to get good jobs. They don't feel like they're going to have families. They don't feel like they're going to have any quality of life. They don't even probably going to own anything. They're not going to own homes. I mean, this is obviously not the students who are of the absolute 1%, of which there are many at Columbia, members of Congress's children and all that kind of thing. And this is really, really meaningful and really, really important to them. And I remember having that feeling when I was their age, but I can imagine now with how things are going, it's even more heightened.
Yeah, but at the same time, I remember occupying a university management building over Gaza, the Castlead, in 2009. So, yeah, it was Operation Castlead, which was an assault on Gaza. But we never did that thing of taking hold of a space and deciding who can come in and out.
That's what's very bizarre, because they have all these liberal politics of like safe space and kind of these utopian anarchist ideas of like, we're going to create a space that is outside of the hegemonic powers or whatever. And it's just led to some very bizarre things that have happened.
Well, it's suddenly they're like authoritarian. Right?
Yes.
But I find it really, really odd, because whenever we did anything as students, sort of the left and whoever was around us, we were always thinking how to reach the broadest amount of people and sort of bring anyone in that wanted to.
Yes.
So we never had this idea of you couldn't leave or enter the occupied area. You might have thought, oh, some people need to stay overnight to keep it going.
Yeah.
But there was not this idea of, we're taking over this space and you're allowed in if you agree with our politics, or, you know, like what side are you on? It was not this sort of mentality at all, because we would have thought, well, everyone will hate us and think we're idiots. You basically, if you behave like a dick,
yeah,
it does then ruin any possibility of your cause sort of being given a hearing.
And also, we were really interested in convincing people. Was a big part of it. We would practice when you get this counter argument, this is what you could say.
Oh, we would host debates.
Yeah, yeah. And then we would practice, you give the counter argument to me and we'll do it back and forth until your argument is stronger. I've noticed that the Just Stop Oil girls, those very young women who are in Just Stop Oil, they do very well in interviews. And I think it's because their billionaire funders have paid them to be media trained. But there is absolutely none of this.
Or it's the public schools they attended where they teach debating skills.
Yes. Yeah. But they have their lines ready. They do incredibly well in very high pressure environments. There's a real professionalism. And not to sound like a Marxist-Leninist, but there is not really much of this professional revolutionary mindset in these young people at all. It's about creating a kind of utopian anarchist space in which their feelings are respected and they're quote unquote safe. Whereas when I was a young activist, not to be dramatic, it was like, if you don't end up in prison or dead, that, you know, that's a good thing.
Well, it's also even this idea of autonomous spaces. It's like post-structuralism has just ruined left-wing activism because now it's all about bodies and spaces and using our bodies to police the spaces. You just think, like, what the fuck is this really? And not letting students in a library, I mean, we just would have never, ever, ever considered this. Like, it would have been just madness. We would have been like, do you want to be the most unpopular people on campus? You know?
Yeah, and it also means because they're not being professional about it, and because the focus seems to be this safe space thing, that they're making really serious tactical errors, like telling Jewish students to go back to Poland, which I thought was appalling.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've encountered something similar in the student movement from 2010 onwards a bit, and in its decline, you know, again, as happens, the more authoritarian, anarchic trend sort of came up, and there were some students that occupied some building in Bloomsbury. And what they do is that they, in the UK at least, they say that we're turning it into a social centre.
Okay.
And that just means a hangout club. And I just remember thinking, this is ridiculous. And I remember going there, and I think I heard, I don't know if it was like a bottle of beer, but I don't drink beer, so I don't know what it will have been. But you know, like an Alco Pop. I don't know what they're called. What?
An Alco Pop, okay.
Yeah, like a little bottle of...
Sometimes Jed comes up with phrases and I'm like, are you from Peaky Blinders? Like, what's going on?
This is a real term. I don't know if they're popular anymore, but this was, you know, it was popular when I was a teenager. And anyway, so a bottle of some weak alcohol. And I remember wandering down this corridor and there were people sat on the floor having their social centre. And I just remember there wasn't a bin. So I sort of did this thing of thinking, I'll just pop it on the floor. But I like let it drop. I kind of leaned and then let it drop from my hand.
Yeah.
And immediately one of the girls went, maybe I was slightly drunk, so I was a bit rude back. One of the girls went, oh my God, can you like not respect the space, please? And I just went, what? And she was like, you practically threw that bottle. And I went, I mean, I literally placed it on the floor. I just didn't place it. Like the final foot, basically, I just like popped it on the floor. And I just, and I also then just started going like, the thing is, the way I feel in the space and like the way that I want to commune with the vibes in the space, I just felt like it was appropriate for me to not completely place the bottle, but kind of just like pop it on the floor. And because it was just like, this is bullshit. This whole idea that it's meant to be comfortable for everyone, it's not. It's personal fiefdoms. That's what it degenerates into. And a lot of the time, that's even what the initial ambition is.
That's right. Often, and I won't say specifically about Columbia or the other universities involved, I don't know, but often by older men from particular political tendencies that want to use the opportunity to recruit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what that story became, right? Because I remember my flatmate got told, Jen threw a wine bottle at a woman in the social centre.
Wow.
And I found the woman, and she's the same woman who, on a Antifa demonstration in Trafalgar Square, there's still footage of it, I think, on YouTube, she called a black woman who was a TERF there, she called her the N-word. Yeah. She was basically a really, really mentally ill white Mexican woman that pretended to be indigenous, as they all do.
Mestizo.
Exactly. But she just looked Spanish. And she disappeared after that because that was on camera.
Right.
I can't quite remember her name, but I would out her. Oh, I don't want to get it wrong. Anyway, and I confronted her and said, are you telling people that I threw... It wasn't even her, by the way. She wasn't in the corridor, but she heard that I dropped a bottle and then she changed it to threw a bottle at me.
Right.
And I said in front of loads of people, I said, you say I threw a wine bottle at you? And she said, yes. And I said, where did it hit you? And she didn't answer. And I was like, yeah, because you couldn't think of a lie that quick off your head.
Yeah.
You couldn't think, oh, in my face, oh, in my shoulder. But these kind of things, like, this is why they're all obsessed with, like, micro interactions, because they take someone going down a corridor and basically popping a bottle on some carpet in a corner because I didn't know where the bin was as, oh, my God, you have just committed the greatest microaggression against our utopian space ever.
Yeah, and I think that the logic is life is hard because people don't respect that people's lives are made harder by these various structures of power And when you are criticized for your handwriting, it's classism. And when you feel bad about whatever, it's your toxic family that's inculcated into bourgeois ideology. They probably wouldn't even say the word bourgeois because they're all bourgeois, whatever it is. And then the logic is that we create a space in which none of those things exist.
It's just ridiculous.
So that by example, is that the logic? By example, it could be recreated.
I think originally that was the logic. It was the idea as if we could be outside capitalism.
Yeah.
Lots of nutty feminists have the idea we can be outside patriarchy.
Yeah.
If we go somewhere alone as women, as if women don't reproduce patriarchy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they as if you could just switch your brain off and suddenly you're a new flower in bloom in a completely different garden for those 7 days that you've got your social centre or your feminist camp or your occupation in a university. And I think that, but ultimately what it's now, I just think it's about sort of, other than the actual politics and that people might really mean them and
yeah.
have really good will in that respect, on the whole, it's sort of overdetermined by this actual wish to just have power.
Mm.
And sort of that's why it becomes really authoritarian. And that's what I see with the weird policing of who goes in, who goes out, because this never existed previously.
No.
It just didn't exist 15 years ago.
No. And even that thing of, did you see the clip of them wanting food?
Yes. I mean, this is like, obviously, like, why do you think university owes you food? Obviously, you should be able to bring your own food in, fine. But this idea that you're entitled to food from the cafeteria is very odd.
Well, I think a lot, and I'm not going to speak for all the protests because I think some of them are at state schools and so on, but I think certainly the ones at, like, Columbia are kids who've never had to, like, organize a meal for themselves, have never had to cook anything at home. Like, some of them are of the, like, the top 1% of the top 1%.
Oh, I know a guy there who is, like, enormous wealth.
Yeah.
Just, like, exuberant wealth.
Yeah, like, people who, like, the kind of people, like, when Ricky Gervais said he went to, UCL, he said he met people who had never been to a supermarket. Like, I think some of those people, I think his name is Shai Davidi, the Israeli professor who's been banned from campus, who's been complaining on...
All the other professors have been banned from campus as well. He wasn't just singled out.
No. He is allowed into the business school in which he teaches. Anyway, he was saying that one of the students who was suspended and then the suspension wasn't enforced, who brought what he described as a terrorist onto campus to do a teach-in about a particular topic, that her mother works for the U.S. State Department.
Right.
So
a lot of this is about rebelling against mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
Against capitalist mommy and daddy, against establishment mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
There was a girl in my PhD department whose dad was president of the EU at one point.
Yeah.
And he ran against Angela Merkel for prime ministership or whatever, the Chancellor of Germany.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you talk about anti-capitalism. I mean, basically, there's really one person in your life you need to convince.
Yes.
This is all just sort of teenage rebellion.
Yeah.
Whilst also getting the cookies, whilst also going to Columbia, whilst also getting the PhD.
Yeah.
It's never actually about not accruing currency and value in that world still.
Yeah.
But it's sort of still acting out this kind of veneer of rebelliousness.
But also because all the DEI and decolonization, all those kinds of politics are incorporated into their curriculums, into the human resources policies of their universities, into how they're marked in their essays, they think that is included in the broader social, and Palestine is in, this is all included, this will get them cookies in that broader regime or paradigm.
Well, I really wish we could make a distinction between anti-colonialism and decolonialism, because my understanding, maybe I'm wrong, but the way that I understand it in how I see it gets used, is decolonization is about removing colonization that is complete. So America, Canada, Australia,
yeah.
New Zealand. I don't think that's possible.
No.
I don't think you can unbake a cake.
No.
And I don't see why we would try, because it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And you'd end up, I think, with not what you wanted anyway. The thing about Israel-Palestine is that that process of colonization is not complete.
Mm.
I mean, it's hard to say, but there could be a two-state solution potentially.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not decolonization. It's anti-colonialism. And could we all just now like agree to just have two states, a peace and reconciliation process, a halfway house situation similar to Northern Ireland, and that's it, and we all agree? Or rather, everybody compromises and everybody's equally unhappy, but this is the solution. I don't even think Palestine is not decolonialism.
No.
Because the colonialism's not complete yet. That's the whole thing that the argument goes. It's the fault line of Western imperialism in the Middle East. It's not about Judaism or Islam. The argument is meant to be about imperial powers. And yes, if Israel went back to the 67 borders, or even if they kept some of the settlements in the West Bank, but there was a two-state genuine agreement, I think that, I mean, that would be it. I mean, it shouldn't be radical to say this. I get criticized for supporting even a two-state solution, and then some people think it's wildly radical. It's not. It's actually the consensus moderate position. It's just getting there is very difficult. But that for me is, I'm not very interested in decolonizing minds. And then you go, but then they say, oh yeah, we want to materially decolonize places. Well, you can't. All you can do is anti-colonialism whilst that's still in process. And the process has been complete in Canada and America and Australia for centuries, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think they'll be reading Edward Said, and they'll be reading Frantz Fanon, and they'll be reading all these people in their classes, and they'll think, oh, this is how I act and live that out. And it's supported by mommy and like the university says it's great. It's supported by it's my value. That's just how they get how I get cookies. And then when their university is like, oh, no, we're not going to provide you food to occupy the campus. They're like, what's going on? We were reading Frantz Fanon in your class.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks ago.
Well, I actually think they'll be reading much more stupid people than Fanon and Said.
Yeah.
But also, Frantz Fanon was talking about Algeria, where the process of colonization was not complete. It was anti-colonialism.
It's a very deeply misunderstood book. That Wretched of the Earth. It's a psychoanalytic book, yeah. And people read it as if it's... So it's what he's talking about, white people being in the name of the father, and that the white people need to be killed so we can kill the name of the father, so we can... It's a psychoanalytic reading. He's not speaking literally kill all white people.
No, and when he's talking about that in a psychoanalytic frame, the mind of the settler, he's not saying you... pop it in America, in a country that's been colonized for centuries and it's a done deal.
Yeah.
You need to think differently. He's not saying this. He's talking about what it's actually like in the material reality there.
Yes.
And the subject position of the settlers and the natives. And
He was literally working at an Algerian psychiatric hospital when he wrote it.
Yeah. So I think they'll probably be reading people far worse than that anyway. But you're right that they must be confused. Why aren't we getting cookies for this, given this is what is in all of our courses?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a big wake-up call if they indeed do have criminal records after. But then they've also got the money to get it expunged, probably, most of them.
Yeah, or they'll be fine anyway. I mean, they could just live off the trust funds for the rest of their lives. I mean, they wouldn't have maybe the stunning careers that their parents would have wanted for them or something like that. But none of them are going to have actual meaningful consequences for any of this.
Well, there's also this idea that, you know, students are in this particular revolutionary space because are they part of the working class? Are they not? Well, sort of. But then at the same time, they're in this position where they have lots of time. Right. There isn't just a material thing where if you don't go to work and you go on strike, you don't get money. They don't have these same constraints. But at the same time, to quote Tony Cliff of all people, it's this idea that it kind of goes up like a rocket and down like a stone.
Yeah.
So these things flare up and then often in holidays they go back down, or if you all get removed by the police and put on buses. But often students are considered cannon fodder by left-wing groups.
That's right.
To push them into this. And I remember being on protests and, this idea that, you know, everyone that was a student should go to the front. So you ended up basically getting battened by police. And then also you were the first ones to get arrested. And I just remember thinking, like, because X boy, say, got arrested. Well, great, now you can't ever visit America. You maybe can't visit Australia or Canada. Good luck getting a job in certain sectors. Like, yeah. You don't realise at that age how curtailing it can be, the consequences of getting involved with these kind of things.
Yes. And also how some people are keen to push the idea and fully believe the idea that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. And they really believe that, and they try and enact consequences along those lines.
Yeah. I don't know how much that's carrying anymore nowadays.
Certainly not in the US to the same extent, no.
Not to the same extent it was. But I think that, yeah, and often students, because they're young and they lack life experience, they overestimate also the scale of what they're involved in. So I remember in the 2010 student movement, that was only really a movement for about 3 months. People were standing up saying, this is going to be bigger than 1968. Well, no, it's not.
No.
Like, what are you talking about? Why would it be? May 1968 was all over the world.
Yeah.
Like, what? This is just the UK. Like, we could already say that's not true.
Yeah. And it does see, I do hear the criticism from some people, is that among young, I think mostly white, middle-class liberal people, that there is like a conveyor belt of causes they seem to take up. And in 2020, it was the BLM stuff. Now it's the Palestine stuff. And how serious are they actually about any given issue?
I was a fan of BLM before it was cool in 2014.
Same, absolutely.
But also, partly because it wasn't just embraced by the establishment, it didn't have a lot of the bullshit politics that it eventually did.
No.
Like the organisers paying themselves millions of pounds in America.
Yeah.
I love that they said, oh, that's reparations. That's definitely not how anything works.
No.
I can't go around and I'd be like, all right, I want some class reparations. And I see that my neighbour has a Mercedes, knock on his door and go, I think you owe me 20 quid, pal. Like, this is not how any of it works. But it's because it's almost like real politics or real movements have been foreclosed. And now there's just this weird individual stuff. Like, out of BLM, we got buy a trans person lunch.
Yeah.
And people would just put their PayPal me links up.
Mm.
You just think, this isn't how redistribution of wealth happens.
No.
A redistribution of wealth happens through the state.
Yes.
It's not meant to be personally interactive with people. Or charity, basically. It's not meant to be charity. The whole point about charity is it's not very radical.
Yeah, charity maintains a hierarchical relationship. That's what it does. It actually cements those hierarchical relationships and that there's someone giving and someone receiving. And it's often like just a moral laundry for rich people, which is exactly how all this stuff happens. And then they use some anarchist, Kropotkin, I always can never pronounce his name anyway, who came up with this concept of mutual aid, which was, you know, supposed to be something different. But it's not. It's charity. You're just doing charity.
Yeah, you're just calling it something else.
Yeah.
Just to make the point about when you said about this idea that anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are the same thing. Sometimes they are.
Yes. Yeah.
Not all the time. But I think that there is, maybe it's because X allows a lot of speech, should we say. I've certainly seen a bit of a flare up of anti-Semitism, even removed from anything to do with Israel.
Yeah.
In quite a way I have not seen before.
Yeah.
Like an uptick, certainly.
Mm. Well, I was just probably very heavily censored before Elon.
Yeah.
And I'm almost grateful for it, because then you can kind of get an idea of what...
You know where people are coming from.
Well, no, not that you know where people are coming from. You know the scale of it.
Right, right.
Because, you know, before you could think, oh, it's the same with the kind of stuff men put about women. You know, it gives you kind of a false sense of the world if you're having all these things curtailed for you. But no, I think that a lot of these kids will have been involved in BLM when they were teenagers. Now they're doing this. And it makes me think the fact that they want the university to feed them, to me, thinks that they don't really understand serious politics and what the consequences of doing serious politics are, like going to prison, for example. Like, they don't have an understanding of that. They still think they're going to be like ensconced in kind of quote unquote safety and establishment approval. They want to be doing this, and they want the university to approve of them, which is not something that I think any student movement had thought before.
No, you never thought about approval from the university. In fact, it creeped you out a bit, or you knew that it was a bit of a lure to try and get you to concede something or other. You know, that they would sometimes be very friendly to you in meetings as they try to negotiate a particular deal.
Yes.
And you'd think, oh, am I being played here because of how nice they're being? No, it's very, very odd. And I think that one really good thing to watch on this is the Evergreen College 3-part documentary on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's quite short. Each clip's like 20 minutes or half an hour or something, but it really shows a campus takeover and a load of students just going wild, aiming their ire at Brett Weinstein.
Yeah.
Who's a very liberal, middle of the road kind of guy. And I almost wonder if that's why they hated him so much. And just the way that they're allowed to run riot in a totally unreasonable way. They didn't have a cause. It was just opposition to Brett Weinstein. And there's this whole thing where they get these lecturers to come and attend a lecture from them. And they're like, you should be learning from us. It's just like, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know anything much in your early 20s.
No.
Not compared to what you know later.
Yeah.
And even the vice chancellor, when he was speaking to them, the president of the university, they said things like, oh, take your hands out your pockets. And then he asked permission to go to the loo. And they said, oh, we'll escort you there. And at one point, he even starts to try and agree with them and make some like cringe comments about, you know, I gotta sort my shit out. What are you talking about? Are you a member of the KKK? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
This idea that Evergreen College, a liberal arts school for poshos, is like a bastion of like racism and homophobia. It's just like, do you know what the real world is? This whole place is like a nice bubble, and that's why people kind of enjoy it. So, like, to pretend that you... But this is the thing. This is the whole thing with, like, LARPing as if it's a civil rights movement. The civil rights movement was not popular.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, I think that the reason that I was able to talk about trans publicly with my face and my name and all the consequences of that and whatever is because when I was around that age, I was doing political activism around issues that were deeply unpopular, that were not things that people wanted to talk about. The things that got like shit thrown at you and water thrown over your head and, you know, people posting like all kinds of stuff. And these kids, it's just like, because I think BLM was sponsored by like L'Oreal.
Nike.
And all this stuff. They think, like, I think the food example is absolutely demonstrative of the whole thing. Like, if you're going to do radical politics, you're not going to get your hand held by institutions. It's not how that works. And it makes me thoughtful about like the coddling of the American mind, that book I haven't read, but a lot of people reference and I probably should read, about, yeah, just these kids that have been ensconced in like these sort of quote unquote safe places and like overly therapized and validated and having their hands held, and every kind of negative experience or experience of distress they have is a trauma. And like, I think another good demonstrative example of this is I don't think it was Columbia. I think it was another university. There was a student who was allergic to bananas.
Oh yeah.
So they put up signs in order to maintain this safe place. Like, no bananas. We want to keep XYZ person safe, the safety. So then the pro-Israel protesters just bought a bunch of bananas and were eating. But this is what it is to do politics. This is what it is to be political. If you are not comfortable being hated, being the enemy in someone else's story and having them try to destroy you, if you are not comfortable with that cognitive posture, if you are not comfortable with that posture being held by all the major institutions around you, you cannot be political in this way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. All of this stuff definitely started here sort of over 10 years ago. I remember a friend of mine was on the National Union of Students. They called it, I don't remember the committee name, the Bureaucracy Committee. Anyway, he was in charge of organizing the conference and enjoyed bureaucracy for whatever reason. Bureaucracy, sorry, I keep saying it wrong. Anyhow, he said on the first day that some woman came like running full pelt down one of the conference aisles and was like, I'm allergic to oranges. You need to put a call out saying that no one can have orange juice. And he said, oh, but you know, we did ask participants in advance, you know, on a form if you had any allergies. She was like, oh, I didn't get that form or whatever, you have a duty of care. At the end of the day, I don't know, just don't eat the oranges. Like, you don't drink the orange juice. Like, how allergic can you be?
Well, it's just what people...
Or it's your risk to stay. Or if you're that allergic, leave.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever inch people can take. I was at another conference where they had an app for the conference, and an older woman said, it was in a session about disability and ability, and an older woman said, oh, that app, it's so difficult to use. It's not disabled. It's not good for disabled people, and I found it very disabling. And I was thinking to myself, I said, oh no, but it's on a touch screen. It has like text to speech for deaf people. It's very clear. And I was like, no, you're just old and older and you don't know how to use a smartphone app. There's nothing to do with disability. People with disabilities like nonverbal autism use iPhone apps all the time. That's like a primary way in which they communicate. The idea that this is like disabling for you, it's like, no, you just didn't want to take the 10-15 minutes to learn how to use the app, because, you know, and we'd be sympathetic for it. You could say it's ageist.
Or maybe you just can't use it. I can't use Snapchat. I'm too old for it.
Yeah. But it's any inch people can take.
But what I find so strange is my... I don't know if it was my mentality or I thought it was to do with my politics. There's always this idea of, oh, I'm all right, don't worry. So it would be like, oh, you know, the Palestinians are suffering so much. Why would I care about whether I'm having a meal this evening?
Absolutely.
Or I'll eat whatever's going. And I'd like the idea of people being like, oh, yeah, Jen joins in. Oh, yeah, Jen doesn't care. Jen's tough. Jen understands the politics of this and it's more important than, you know, what you're having for dinner tonight. And it seems like they take the total opposite, which is, yeah, you need to baby me, you need to cater for me. Why aren't you thinking about me?
Yeah.
And what's really odd is that, I don't know, because maybe it's just how I grew up, is that you often, if you act like that, you tend to just get a very harsh response. Like, not everything's about you. Who do you think you are? Oh, why are you the big I am?
I don't think they got those responses, those American middle-class kids. I do not think they've ever got a response like that in their life.
It's just, but it's very odd that their whininess seems to work. I remember even one woman, actually, I think I posted this podcast on a Facebook group, and she said, this isn't accessible to me because, like, maybe I'm deaf and or something like that. And then I said, oh, you know, you can actually get on a podcast, you can put it in a thing. The words come out like you know, like you listen
Spotify
to
Spotify has
exactly
a deaf enabled feature.
Yeah. and then she came up with some other reason and said, oh, but I might not have access, I don't know how to use it. At the end of the day, it's just like, well, tough, really.
I mean, well, I've spent quite a lot of time around people with quite serious life limiting disabilities, deaf people who are paraplegic. They don't want you to help them. They have their shit figured out. They know the text-to-speech app. They know where the disabled bathroom is. They know how to open the door. They know how to get in and out of their car. They do not want the help, and they are fully seeking to be as independent as possible, because when you have a serious disability, that's something that you want to insure for yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't know any person who is deaf who doesn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
And I know quite a lot of deaf people, so I am very skeptical of it.
Yeah, well, I'm skeptical.
And when they're faking it, or they're putting it on, I can tell.
Well, it's that they're trying to get a certain satisfaction out of, say, squeezing out of you catering for them. And actually, people with disabilities don't do that.
Yeah.
Because A, it probably doesn't work very much, and B, no. They find a way to get the thing that they want anyhow.
Yeah, because if you're actually deaf, to try and get accommodations is hard. When you're a person who can advocate for yourself and speak English and don't use sign language and don't need to read lips, people can do it. But if you're genuinely deaf and hard of hearing, people don't like actually helping you.
Yeah, it is like a weird baby grift. How much can you treat me like a baby?
Yeah. I just think that they all need to go to the... like some kind of military. But you could see why, like, Marxist-Leninists or Marxists in the past would send young people to, like, book clubs and schools, and we're going to train you on how to think and how to talk and how to be like, it's brainwashing. No, it's like a process of formation, of political formation. Other political tendencies have it as well. Right-wing people, very serious right-wing people, certainly have it. And it's just this anarchy of they're basically educated by bourgeois institutions, and then they think that that has given them like the proper training that they need to do very serious politics. And it hasn't. It clearly has not.
No. Yeah, it's like liberalism on steroids. They are radical liberals.
Yeah, they're radical.
They might call themselves communists or whatever, but they're absolutely not in theory and in conduct.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
And tune in next week. Oh. If you want more from us, we have a Patreon with bonus episodes. And also, if you like this episode, please subscribe so that you get notifications when the next one comes out next week on Spotify or Apple.
That's right. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.